Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John along with Matthew Delph. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Well, I'm not really. It's freezing cold in Myrtle Beach. I can tell you that I don't even think Bigfoot would be out today. He'd be hunkering down in the cave more than the fire, I bet you. But
yeah, I mean, it's hazy and cold here as well.
I know, and I know that you're up in southwestern Virginia. Let me ask you something. Are you guys supposed to get another blanket of snow here?
Well, we were supposed to get one this past weekend, but it kind of went north of us, and all we got was mostly rain. It was a little bit of snow on the top of the mountains, the higher elevations, but we missed it this go around. I don't know about next go around. I haven't checked the weather, but I'm ready for it to be summertime already.
Exactly. Well, Matt, I think that's why we got a hold of our guest. He's sitting in shorts with fan on, and he is in beautiful, sunny Australia. Ladies and gentlemen, we're pleased to have with us Jackson Snail. He's a Bigfoot explorer, a paranormal researcher, and a member of BFRO. Jackson, good afternoon by way of us, and good morning to you in Australia. How's everything?
Oh, very well, thank you here, Doctor. It's a lovely morning here. It's only 8 a.m. It's actually Tuesday here. We're about 14 hours ahead of you. We're going to be hitting temperatures of up to 125 today. It's already up to 80 in my place at the moment. So, yeah, I'm just sitting here in shorts in front of the fan at the moment.
I'm running to the Myrtle Beach Airport right now. Pick up, okay?
Yeah, you better make room for two.
So, well, you guys are welcome to come down here anytime you want.
Well, we'll talk about that. I think that's much colder here. Might just have to. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us today. You come to us as a friend of Matt Delph's. And Matt, thanks for suggesting Jackson. I spoke with him some last night. He's quite an accomplished fellow. He's got a long list of things that he does. He's an artist, but he's also a Bigfoot researcher, explorer, and paranormal guy. Kind of like I call myself a paranormal guy, too. So, Jackson, tell us a little bit about everybody. Tell us where you're from and kind of locate it for us. Tell us if it's north, south, east, west in Australia, because a lot of us don't know much. I mean, we probably know where Melbourne and Sydney are, but that might be about it for me. Tell us exactly where you're from and what kinds of Bigfoot activities are you interested in and do you take part of?
Okay. I'm on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. We've got three states that run up the east coast of our country. Like, there's only six states and territories on the mainland, and there's one extra state that's an island state off the south. Australia, to most people over there, if they don't know, is roughly the same area and size as the US. So it's quite a big place. It's the only place that's a continent, an island, and a country. So it's quite a unique place. I'm on the mid-north coast. I was born in Sydney. I'm roughly 300-400 kilometres north of there now. I've been interested in Bigfoot and paranormal and everything since the late 1970s, I guess, when I was a kid, when I first saw a documentary on Bigfoot on TV, and it just sort of intrigued me. And I used to live in an old house down in Sydney, and I believe that was haunted. It was very old. A lot of things happened in that place. Stereo would turn itself on, wasn't plugged in. Lights would turn on, doors would open and close, that sort of thing. So I've always been a believer in that sort of side of life. It's, you know, you can't have a closed mind on anything.
You can. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, sir.
There is so much out there that we don't understand that, you know, that we turn ourselves off to. just either because we're ignorant or because we're just not open to it. And I've always been in that sort of mind, and I have had an encounter or two myself with what we call Yowie, which is what I believe to be a subspecies of possibly, not, like, the way I look at things is we have all these sightings around the world, and when it all used to be Gondwana land or, you know, Mesopotamia or whatever name you want to call that major landmass back then, there were heaps of land bridges where different things could move around. They say that the Neanderthal went extinct, what, 60,000 years ago. How can we prove that? They proved that Homo sapiens interbred with the Neanderthal back in those days. Who's to say that the Gigantopithecus didn't interbreed with the Neanderthal and had a subspecies, cross species, whatever, and just became the ultimate stealth to stay away from the Homo sapiens over 60,000 years. I mean, I believe if you, your entire life and all of your ancestors have spent their entire life trying to hide from another species, they're going to be the ultimate in stealth. Like, they're going to be almost impossible to find. And I also believe that the main reason that we don't find any evidence of bones or bodies or anything is because they may have some sort of spiritual element to them. Like, Neanderthals used to bury their dead 60,000 years ago. Humans continue to do it today. Who's to say that Bigfoot doesn't do the same thing? I'm just intrigued because, like, we have three subspecies here. One looks like the orang pendek from Indonesia. Indonesia was part of Australia a long, long time ago. We have a mid-sized one that's around roughly 6 to 7 foot, and then we have the Yowie, which will grow between 9 and 11 foot. And they range in all different colours. And, yeah, I've had quite a few experiences with them.
Oh, I had no idea that you had three different subspecies, Matt. Yeah. You're our expert.
Yeah.
Subspecies over here in the U.S.
Well, yep. They've got what they consider over here in the U.S. They've got the skunk ape. They consider that more south. I think a lot of it, though, is you've got, you know, just your region pretty much. They got the grass man up towards Ohio, which is a bigger, much more aggressive. Out west, you know, you've got your kind of the cone-shaped Ted, the Sasquatch, that, like from the Patty film, a lot of it out west there. But I believe there's more species than what they're actually classifying. And as you were talking about, I'm kind of curious if Australia, like I know here in the U.S., I've talked to you before about it, that they cover it up and they want to keep it quiet. So any type of evidence, if you do have bones or anything, they're going to cover it up and they're going to hide it. Even if you were to post, if you had a bone, they would come and they would take it from you if the government knows that you had it. But I'm kind of curious, is Australia more open, the government? How are they towards the Yowie and stuff? Do they keep it quiet or do they try and cover it up a little bit, or are they open to it?
In all honesty, I think they just think that it's a mythical creature and don't even consider it, which is quite sad. Like over here, the amount of open land that we've got, like I think I was telling you last night on the phone, last night for me, the area of your Grand Canyon is, what, 1,900 square miles? Our Blue Mountain area is almost as deep, but it covers 4,320 square miles, and it's all dense forest. People have gone in and not come out, and there have been many sightings in there. I'm not speculating that they were taken, but it's just such a broad expanse of forest that you just get lost in there. And there's no way that nothing couldn't be in there that hasn't been discovered, because there's so many parts of that forest that haven't even been looked at yet. We have a mountain range that runs up the east coast of Australia goes for over 2,100 miles in length, and it's all forest. I've had a sighting up near the Queensland border, like I'm in New South Wales on the mid-north coast. Queensland runs the entire north area of Australia. I've had an experience up there at a friend's property. He invited me over and said, look, I've got some weird stuff going on. Come out and see what you think. And I went and stayed at his property one day. It was on roughly 250 acres. It was an old dairy bales that had been converted into a cabin. And we're in there one night, and we hear this huge bang on the side of the cabin. I'm thinking, what's that? Like, there was horses, but they were in stables. We've got cows, but they're in the paddock. Then there's another huge bang. And then there was a huge crash. We've gone outside, two big, huge lumps of wood beside the cabin. We had a 3,000-gallon water tank that was almost three-quarters full, about 5 foot off the ground. The thing was pushed off the stand. Now, I don't know. The smell was just gagging. Let's see, it was sort of like a cross between really, really bad body odor, something really like, couldn't really get any prints or anything from anything that had been around on the ground, as it was all shale rock. But for something to be able to push a water tank that full off the stand, 5 foot off the ground, and that smell, that was my first encounter. And I've been hooked ever since.
That smell is interesting, because that's whenever I had my encounter, that was the first thing that I noticed. Anytime it was around, it left that odor. And it was like you described, it's really nasty. You won't forget it. I mean, it's a nasty smell.
Oh, you can't describe it. It's just the worst BO, death stench, wet dog sort of, you can't, You can't
I agree.
Put it into words, can you?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And something to push over that water tank, you'd have to be pretty strong.
I mean, to be able to push over three-quarter full, 3,000-gallon tank off a five-foot stand.
Now, did you notice how the animals were acting? Did you notice if the horses or anything?
They were going crazy. We had an enclosed pig pen with 4 5-foot fences on it. Two were missing the next morning. Nothing was touched except for the roof.
Now, were the pigs missing?
Yeah, two were missing.
Yep, I've heard a lot of body encounters around pigs.
Yep, none of the fences were breached or touched in any way, but there were two pigs missing. And there was disturbance on the roof of the pen.
So they just lift you right up. How big were these hogs?
These things, like, the ones we get down here, up to 11 foot tall.
Okay, so they were, how many pounds would you say? Probably
pounds, I'd say easily 600 to 1,000.
Oh, wow. So it'd take a lot of strength.
Those are the big ones, those are the big ones. The smaller ones, like the orangutan deck, they're around 5 foot. They only hit probably around 250, 300 pounds. Then you've got the mid-sized ones up to around 500, 600 pounds, and the large ones get up to 1,000.
Had there been any sightings in that area, or...
the last ones that I've heard of were up around the New South Wales Queensland border, and there's been a bit going on up there. I've heard from one fella up there a little while ago that he's found a couple of his goats strung up in a tree about 8-9 foot off the ground, and it looks like they've been ripped open, all their stomachs have been taken, just all the internal organs, legs broken.
Wow.
I don't know, would it put something up in the tree that high, break legs and just take the innards, but yeah. Been a few things going on around here.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, we don't have bears or anything, so the only ones we have are drop bears. I'm not sure if you've heard of a drop bear.
I don't think so. What is that?
Yeah. that's sort of a joke we have with the tourists here. Like, they call koalas koala bears, but they're not really a bear. They're a marsupial. But we have this story, something that's called a drop bear. That's sort of like a vampire koala that drops out of trees and attacks people.
Yeah, okay.
That's why they have a drop bear. Yeah. But there has been quite a few things like that going on around here. Like, we've even had big cat sightings and everything down south. Like, big black cats. Yeah, we don't know what they are. Like, what, the escape from circus? Don't know. There's still been sightings of the thylacine, which is the Tasmanian tiger. It's thought to be extinct since the 1930s. And it's sort of like a large dog with stripes and a really long tail and sort of haunched down at the front, really high back end, and it can open its mouth twice the size of any other dog. There's been a few sightings of that lately, too. It's a wild place here. I'm sure you saw that that picture of the brown snake that I had.
Yes. Now, like, I'm kind of curious, like, Dr. John, he does a lot of research on the lizard man here in the swamp.
Okay,
He could tell you a little bit about that, and I'm wondering, curious, you know, if you guys have anything similar to that.
I'm sure
well,
that
we
do.
We talked about it last night, and Jackson, you called it Bunyai. Is that what you call it down there?
It's called the Bunyip. B-U-N-Y-I-P. Bunyip, yes.
The Bunyip. Yeah, Mitten, tell a little bit about that, because when you showed that to me, there were a lot of parts of the description made it look, it might be lizard man, what we might call lizard man around here.
Okay. Basically, the Bunyip is a creature that lives in inland rivers and water holes and things like that, and drags people to their death. It's been described as cross between, like, lizard-like, possibly, you know, some people cross it between, like, a reptile and a cow. There's many different descriptions of it, but it's like the Aboriginals here in Australia, they've been here for, like, we've got cave paintings from 50, 60,000 years ago, and there are many Dreamtime stories, like, because there was no actual writing for the Aboriginals here in Australia, that they told everything through story, which they call a Dreamtime, from the ancestors. And they've been telling stories of the Bunyip and the Hairy Man, which is what they call a Yowie or Bigfoot. It's been going on for thousands and thousands of years here, being passed down through the Dreamtime, passed through the stories from the elders to the, you know, to the children and through the generations. And there's many different descriptions of the Bunyip. One would be, yeah, very similar to what you would call the lizard man. And I'm not sure if it's was just a story told to children to keep them away from the water because of the crocodiles and stuff. But there have been quite a few sightings that I have heard of here, and sounds like nothing else that I could, describe. Like, I know many different animals here in Australia. Like, I've been studying animals my whole life, and some of the descriptions I've heard is like nothing that I have seen or read of before. So it's there's got to be a lot more to it. I mean, you've got to keep an open mind, as I was saying before. And I definitely believe in all these things because, as I said, I've had those experiences with the Yowie. I'm thinking, well, the Yowie's there. I've heard all these other sightings of other things. So who's to say that this, you know, we can't discredit it just because not many people have seen it? You know what I mean? It takes us believers to be able to... Sorry?
I was saying, we have had a sizable number of people see the lizard man around here. It comes in cycles.
Yep.
And I identified that when I interviewed a fellow from Bishopville, he told me that lizard man seems to come around during periods of low rainfall and high heat because that's when the salt water gets pushed away from, because rivers flow out to the ocean in general. But the salt water, when the rivers and the lakes get dry, the salt water encroaches more into the to the midlands of our state. And that's when we tend to see this thing we call the lizard man. I mean, there are things of lizard man from dawn of time in that area. There are Indian legends about it. And today, 6 months ago, I had a very good, credible friend have some vandalism at her house to a fence that she had. And she said, John, it had to be something very strong and very big, like a lizard man, because no human being could rip boards off of a metal frame that were put in there with inch and a half screw.
Inch and a half screws.
Yeah, it would take something 8 to 10 feet tall that's pure muscle, like a lizard man. We have a lot of things like that. And what I do want to do, we've talked about having you back, and I'll share that with everybody before the show's over. But here in about a month or so, I would like to get you online with Lyle Bender, if I can arrange to have him with us on the show. He wrote the book, Lizard Man, The True Story of the Monster of Bishopville. And I think the two of you would have quite a lively.
I said that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. I'll check in with Lyle. I check with him frequently and see if we can get you two on here to talk about the Bishop version of Lizard Man versus the Bunyip from Australia and see if there's, you know, what is the commonality. I mean, I think that's very important to do, explore these things.
I was just going to say, I've got something to pose to you. You said that the lizard man is seen when it's dry and a lot of heat, yeah?
Right, because the salt water encroaches and the lizard man comes in toward the center of the state.
Well, I'm thinking too, like, lizard man would be reptile or reptilian, would be cold-blooded, so... The heat and everything as well would make him more active as well, yeah?
I think that he likes the salt water. And that's when it's hot, you know, the salt water is going to encroach from the coast up toward the Midlands. And that's why I don't think he likes the salt water. And that's what that we were talking about. So, yeah, I will gather all of this information. I've got a couple of articles that I wrote about a year ago. And I'll get those to you so that you can see a little bit about my research and see what it brought. And then we'll certainly have you and Matt on the show, and we might see if we can get Lyle and have a good old time talking about Bunyip and Lizard Man. Might not be Bigfoot, but they're related. They're all cryptids.
Most
right?
Definitely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense with the water, because if it's coming in and it's a freshwater reptilian, it's going
to
be looking for, you know, better.
Get
I mean, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of like here, where I live at the bottom of a mountain in the summertime, you got we got timber rattlers on the mountain. But when it's dry, hot, and the water levels are low, they come down off the mountain looking for fresh water. So same thing I'd say with lizard man. Same exact scenario. Good point.
Now, I want to end with another question for Jackson. You identified, if I'm correct, three plant tops Bigfoot species in Australia, correct?
Yep, yep. Three different types have been seen.
Can you describe, and then please tell us any other stories you wish, but can you describe, are there any differences in the behavior of the three? Like Matt had mentioned, the behavior of the Bigfoot in the middle of the country, maybe that, you know, the one you encountered in Indiana, he said it was much more aggressive than some of the ones we have down here. So Jackson, do you have any differences in behavior or anything for the three different species that might be existing in Australia?
Yep. From what I've heard, I haven't seen the smaller ones myself, but I have heard stories. They're very elusive. They might bob out behind a tree. They don't really interact with people. They try and stay away from people as much as possible. You've got the mid-range ones, which are a little bit more inquisitive. They'll come out into the open more, maybe throw a small rock or something just to get your attention. And then the big ones, that's what I assume pushed their water tank off and threw those two huge lumps of wood at the... Yeah, they do range in intensity. The larger ones are a lot more aggressive. Smaller ones are a lot more timid. They tend to stay out of the limelight, so to speak.
Okay. Do you happen to have or know if there are differences?
Sorry, I missed that.
Are you aware of any differences in the footprint between the three subspecies?
Okay. I've never seen any of the smaller ones, but the larger ones have the central ridge. So they've almost got a double ball on their foot at the front. Very, very broad. Biggest one I've seen probably be 17 to 18 inches, maybe 7 inches across at the toes. And, quite deep.
Gigantic.
Impressed probably, impressed a good 3-4 inches into the ground in some spots.
Wow.
Now, did that... A toe difference, like, for example, like a gorilla has that thumb, like, on their toe, on their... And it sticks out there, like a gorilla or whatever. Have you noticed anything like that? Like, here in the States, they've had different tracks, like they found. Some of them had 3 toes, 4 toes. And a lot of that, I think, is due to the population is really low, and it could be inbreeding, which causing deformities, or they could... lose a toe through the, on a rock or anything like that. But I think a lot of it's just being deformed from them inbreeding because population is so low. But have you noticed any difference in, like, the toes or the number of toes over there?
I've seen a few prints here where all 5 toes are the same length. I've seen other prints where the big toe is offset slightly to the side. Some of the tracks that have been recorded here, like, it's almost like they're walking on tightrope, but the prints are about 3 feet apart, 4 feet apart.
Hmm. That's very interesting. Very interesting.
I mean, this is great information. This is one thing that I was hoping that we could get is to do a little bit of a comparison between those in Australia with those here. That's not anything, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have not seen anyone really discuss something like that. Have you? The differences between...
I've seen the difference. I mean, I'm not really the prints from, like, for example, Australia to here, but like here, I've seen a lot of, them describe the tracks And what's kind of cool is the dermal ridges on the bottom of the foot. And some of the tracks here in the United States, they would get the track, and it's kind of like, you know, how we have our fingerprints, the dermal ridges. They're the same. It's the same kind of type of dermal ridges that was found 20 years, 30 years ago up in Washington is very similar to ones that they find over here in the East Coast. It's from the same species, they can tell. Of course, it's a little bit different, kind of like fingerprints, but it's the same. It's the same species, they can tell. I know that they've done that here in the United States, but I've never heard it compared to, like, over there, the Yowie, compared to here. I've not done a whole lot of research more on that. That's pretty interesting. I wonder if there's similar ridges to the ones over there.
Well, you know,
Like, if they had some dermal ridges that they could check to see, compare them to the ones here. See, I've never seen that comparison. And that's something that would be pretty interesting to see if they are the same species or very similar. Definitely got me interested in that now. That's a good point, Dr.
Well, good. And there's some – here's where that question really came from. I'm a member at Matt, as you know, I've done a lot of speaking on the Mandela effect and parallel universes and high dimensions, lower dimensions. And that's where I talk about the Mandela effect. And I mean, I'm a member of a number of Mandela effect groups. Everybody's talking about, well, we noticed this. Well, that doesn't do you any good. Yes, there are differences in what we remember versus what we see today. But that doesn't get you any just noticing that Oscar Mayer is spelled differently. What gets you somewhere is trying to examine various structures proposed by astrophysicists and using those to try to figure out, well, what really could be the cause of the Mandela effect, not just some examples. And that's one thing that I like for us to look at is let's look at some comparisons. And let's talk about the difference in the species. I got another question for you on that same line, Jackson. In the United States, the federal government and the state government and the parks do not like to talk about Bigfoot. They do not like that subject. They won't talk about it. They move the topic of the conversation around. It's like no news is no news, and we're not going to tell you. What is the general feeling of your government and your state governments about acknowledging the existence or non-existence of Bigfoot? What does your government say? What's their standard position?
They just laugh it out of Parliament. They wouldn't even believe that anything like that even exists here. It's probably the lowest thing on their agenda ever. Which is quite sad, really. There's a small population of us here in Australia that are knowers, and we try to do what we can to, you know, preserve them. It's so hard in this country. It's like they're not acknowledged at all. It's ridiculous. It's really sad.
There you go, Matt. Not much difference there, is there?
No. Not much difference at all.
Well,
yeah, they're definitely.
And I've said this before, and I don't mind saying it, I'm not mentioning any names, but it's a fact that our Park Service does Bigfoot training for the rangers on an annual basis. They do that for a reason. Don't know why. They do it, and I have seen training agendas that have Bigfoot 101. So yeah, I mean.
I saw one place over there passed a government audit or something to make killing them illegal.
Yes. Yeah, they've actually my research area is a sanctuary, and it's illegal to kill them. there had been a lot of sightings up there, but they made it illegal to kill them. But
that's
the government acknowledged it in 75 here, and they had made up a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in 1975 in the state of Washington. They had to have a atlas of every species of animal and plant and everything that's in that state so the government can go in there and work. And they made this atlas, and they have Bigfoot or Sasquatch listed as a species there. And they spent $200,000 of taxpayers' dollars, and they created this, but yet they still want to keep it hidden. And I believe that they're actually, I believe the government, that's a whole different episode I could go on, but I know for a fact that the government covers it up, and they're going in and they're killing these things and they're wiping them out. Why? I do not know. Maybe because of mass hysteria, maybe because Pacific Northwest logging industry, they would lose all that because it would be an endangered species. But for some reason, they have an agenda to get rid of these things and to keep it covered up as much as possible. And they will make a mockery of it so people will laugh. And they try and find them. They try and find these people that have had encounters to put them on TV to make a mockery of the witnesses. So the people that just sit in their house, don't go out in the woods and don't know anything, of course they're going to think, oh, these guys are crazy, and that's what the government wants everybody to think around here. And the parks, I've told you stories, they don't want certain areas I know of, they basically tell me stay away from that area, nothing going on there, but yet they tell me stay away from it, so there's obviously something going on there. But
yeah, well, they must be. They wouldn't tell you to stay away from something if there's nothing there.
Exactly.
Oh, it's dangerous, but there's nothing there. That's
exactly.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
You've got my theory of reality. My theory of reality is if you can't see it, it's not there. But if you can see it, it's there. And if they tell you avoid this, it's there. It's a fact. It's like UFOs. They can say UFOs
it's
don't
a complete
exist, but I can show you
22.
A million pictures of them. Pardon?
Yeah. It's a complete catch-22. There's nothing there, but don't go in there because, yeah, it's dangerous or, you know, you won't find anything or, but, you know, it's like saying one thing and then sort of alluding to something that's the opposite. It's just crazy. I reckon.
I'd call it obvious, not catch 22. It's pretty obvious something's going on, and
yeah.
people that just don't think and don't want to explore and want to stay uninvolved, those are the ones that they'll convince. But people like me, you, and Matt Bell, people aren't going to convince us of very much unless they show us the truth. Is that right, Matt?
That is exactly right. Exactly right. I know that government lied to you.
I'd basically put it on like a parable with the UFO highway going through Area 51. It's like, oh, it's just desert. There's nothing there. But if you come here, you'll get shot.
Yeah.
It's like they're saying one thing, but it's something completely the opposite.
Yep.
Well, I guess that's the hand of cards we have been dealt, so we better be a little careful about it. And just go on and enjoy ourselves, because we like, you know, all three of us like exploring what folks call the supernatural. I mean,
yep.
my great example story is 125 years ago, if you had told someone that there would be a little black box that was about 5 inches long and about 3 inches wide, and that you could look into it and talk to someone on the other side of the world, they would have said that's crap. Today, that's what every one of us has, which is a cell phone. So, I mean, you know, let's... It's just hard to convince some people, and there are programs out there to keep information away. So we better not talk any more about that or the men in black at all.
Yeah. Well, it's like saying if you went back 60 years ago and told people back in 1969 that there'd be mobile phones or cell phones these days that it'd have more computer power than the rocket that took Armstrong to the moon. And that's only 60 years ago.
That's
Sorry, 50 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, cell phones these days had more computer capacity than that rocket that took
right.
those boys up there that many years ago.
You'll have to work really hard to convince me that we went to the moon before digital technology. I know we went there. But, I mean, you're going to have to work awfully hard to convince me that with analog technology, they went to the moon and came back. You're going to have to convince me pretty hard on that one. I think we've been there, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe
there's
not in
a lot
68.
Of conspiracies around that.
Myself, yeah, I think you know my opinion, Dr. John. I don't think we've ever been there. But and I've got my reasons, but, you know, there's lots of reasons obvious, but people tell me I'm crazy because I think for myself and do my own research, but yet they just go off what the government, they believe everything the government tells them, but yet I'm the crazy one for thinking for myself and, you know, doing a little research myself on things. But the whole moon thing is a whole totally different thing, and I was actually doing some research there on plasma, and, you know, there's different levels of plasma in between here and the moon. And another thing that I found out that you can't send radio signals through plasma, apparently. Kind of makes you wonder how they talk back and forth if they went to the moon and how they get
talking. Now, Matt, are you talking about the real-time conversations they had in 1968 where Houston would say something and then immediately they'd get a response from the surface of the moon? Do you mean to tell me that? That was the first thing I noticed, even when I was a kid. I said, this isn't right. Moon's a long way away. I mean, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. There are other reasons now. So anyway, yeah, we live in a strange and fascinating world. Jackson, I got a question for you. This is a good question.
Yep.
You have had some experiences meeting Bigfoot, right?
Actually in person, but yeah, definite experiences. I've caught glimpses, and I've had encounters.
What's your best encounter?
Yeah. Yeah, the main one was the water tank and that, and the smell. I had caught a couple of glimpses. But really, really hard to get anything of it.
Did you come as close as Matt did? Matt, you were what, about 15 feet away?
It was farther than that. It wasn't no farther than 30 yards. It was closer. I'm bad at judging distance, but it was close enough that I could tell it was bigger than me, and I could tell the shape. I could see the hair outline on its shoulder. I could see hair on its shoulder. So I was pretty close. And in the area I was in, it was such a dense forest, you had to be right up on something to actually see it. But it was farther than 15 foot, but it was inside of 30 yards for sure. It was inside of 30 yards for sure.
Gotcha.
And
well,
I was a total skeptic until then. I was trying to figure out what in the world I was even looking at, you know? And it wasn't friendly.
Right.
So,
and Jackson, I guess you can tell us that they are sometimes not friendly, correct?
No, most definitely. The one that came up to our place that night was I've never been so scared in my life, to tell you the truth. I didn't know if even it'd try and get inside. It wasn't long after that that about, well, that was when I had the second encounter. We've gone for a walk down through the bush and found this tree, fresh green tree, about 5 inches thick, about 8 foot off the ground, and had been bent over at a 45-degree angle till the top of the tree was touching the ground, and had other sort of crossed branches around it. And It was then that we heard something off in the distance and saw something that looked to be, I don't know, it was sort of hard to tell because it's really dense bush, but it would have been at least 8-9 foot tall. And it just sort of bobbed and then just disappeared. And that was my second encounter. That was just up from where we were staying, there in the Bales. So I don't know if it had made like a sort of a humpy, like a sort of a place to stay in. But, yeah, we didn't stay around long.
Now, how far was that away from? How far away was that from where you had your water tank incident?
Probably about, I don't know, about 1,000 yards out in the bush.
Okay, so you definitely could have been the same one or one.
Yeah.
You were definitely in the same area. Okay, great.
Yeah. You're on 250 acres. It was roughly 1,000 yards from where the cabin was. Went out the next morning to have a bit of a look around, see if we could see anything.
Excellent.
Yeah. That was just right on dawn. That was roughly 5 a.m. between 5:30 a.m. We could have a bit of a scout around with a bit of light. Better have them use torches, yeah. And that's what we came across. That was quite interesting.
Yeah, I've got another comparison I'd like you two gentlemen to make. And my question is to both of you, we'll start with Matt, and then we'll let Jackson answer. What type of equipment do you normally take out when you're doing a Bigfoot hunt, like on a Saturday afternoon and you're going out? What type of equipment do you carry with you? What do you carry for safety? And so, Matt, I'm going to start with you. Answer that question, please.
What I normally take, I like to pack light. I research mostly for a personal reason. And, of course, I won't go out in the woods without a gun. I've always got a firearm on my side. I take, of course, a camera, something to take pictures with, like a cell phone, or I've got a video camera for nighttime. But I've got trail camera set up too. But mostly, I don't even look. I mean, I'll look for tracks, but I don't do cast just for the fact that I'm not trying to prove it to the world. I already know it's there. I already know it exists. I just want to face this fear that ran me out of the woods. So my research is a little bit different. If I'm trying to prove it to the world, now if I do find hair or something, I will keep it. Of course, you've got some of the hair samples, Dr. Young. I like it nighttime,
yes,
though. Like, I'd like to clear the thermal imagers and stuff are excellent to show you different stuff out there. And as you've seen from when we went out on the Tennessee one, about something there, white was hair. On the thermal imager, you could see that the white was hair, and we caught something there. But most of the time, though, I mean, I'm not there to make casts. I'm looking for tracks, stuff like that. But I'm wanting to go to its front doorstep, basically, and confront my own fear and to actually see what this thing is.
Okay.
Of course, you know, I take a flashlight and everything like that, too.
Right. Exactly. And do you do primarily hunt during the day or the night, or it doesn't matter? You'll do both.
I do both. It don't matter. But most of my counters have been in the evening.
Okay. Now, how about Jackson? What type of equipment do you carry with you? And do you do primarily daytime or nighttime Bigfoot hunting?
I'm very similar to Matt. Like, I'll probably go out for up to a week at a time. I'll set up trail cams on a perimeter bearing in 360-degree directions, use thermal, put baits down and so forth, like something to entice them to come in, some fresh meat, so on and so forth. just set up a like a little humpy that's well disguised and check my cameras every day, basically. Take a recorder along for any noises that I hear when I do my whoops and so on. And, yeah, basically very, very similar to Matt.
Okay,
that's
one
so
thing
so
I need.
If I try to get a hold of you for up to a week and you don't answer, I can assume you're out hunting.
Yeah, you could possibly do that, though. We do have pretty good cell range here.
Well, that's good. Yeah, do many people use two-way radio, primarily use their cell phone to stay in touch?
No, you know, two-way is free. Yeah, it's a lot easier to just jump on the two-way than to send a text or ring a phone number.
Okay, my buddy Marshall Masters would agree with that.
Yeah.
Why he's such a two-way radio guy.
All right, Matt.
Yep,
I'm gonna. We're getting down. We got about 10 minutes left, Matt. I'm gonna let you take the last couple questions with Jackson.
Okay.
No worries.
Okay. Over there? Do they have like here? We have Bigfoot events and stuff like that, like conferences, and I mean it's really took off over here and getting a lot of eyewitnesses and stuff. Do they have any type of, like Bigfoot conferences or Yowie conferences or anything like that there where people can go and just, talk?
Yeah, we have a group here in Australia called ACRO, which is Australian Cryptozoology Research Organization, and we have conferences here. About that, we have speakers that come in and talk about any cryptids around the country, Yowie, so on and so forth, big cats, the bunyip, all those sorts of things. We do have conferences here. If anyone listening would like to look up the site, it's ACRO, A-C-R-O, and that's based here in Australia. And we've got a lot of active members, and, it's a really good group. It's very insightful.
All right, would that be acro.co.au?
Yep. You can just look it up on Facebook.
Oh, okay. ACRO.
Yep, yep.
All right, everybody, your assignment for the week is to go look up ACRO and see this great organization that Jackson's talking about. I'm going to be checking that out as soon as we're done here. Matt, what else have you got?
We're actually hoping to get a few of our members over there to your last conference, but due to lack of funds, we couldn't get over. So hopefully for the next one, we can get over there.
That'd be excellent.
Mm.
That's the thing. It takes a lot of funding for this research. A lot of people don't realize, we take our own time and money to do this. And
That's it. And you make a lot of sacrifices, too.
Yes, you do. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, we know about that.
Love. Yeah, it's
I'm
all
sorry.
About the love and the understanding and wanting to learn more about these species that are so close to us. I can't describe it any other way, really.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, we have enjoyed speaking with you, and I hope you'll come back and talk with us on Bigfoot and Company sometime soon. Think you could do that, Jackson?
Most definitely. I'm interested in everything from Bigfoot to Nibiru, Planet X. So.
Well, you just led it into my next statement. Not this week. Next Thursday night, you will be my guest on Scarycast, along with Marshall Masters, and we are going to talk about Nibiru, Planet X, and all that conspiracy. So we're going to have a grand time. So we look forward to having you.
That sounds good.
I'll be shooting some announcements out for that, and I think we're going to have a blast.
That'd be great.
Matt, I'm going to turn it over to you for the sayonara, and then we'll be back next week for PM.
Sounds great.
Well, enjoyed having you here, Jackson. I'm going
I enjoyed being here, Matt. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, definitely. Do you have any research coming up that you're going to be doing or anything that we can check back in on with you later on?
Yeah, I'll probably be heading out in the next few weeks, going out for another trek for about a week or so. So if I have any news from that, I'll let you know what happens as soon as possible.
Good deal. We keep in touch pretty good, so. Definitely. That's great. And hopefully sometime we can get together and do some research together.
Most definitely. Yeah, you'll have to come down under sometime, my friend.
Yes, it's a lot warmer there, so I think I'd rather enjoy that.
Yeah, oh, it is at the moment.
Exactly.
I'll just add one last thing. Like, I was only just saying yesterday, like, I think Matt posted that it's like minus 61 in Alaska yesterday. It was hitting 127 here yesterday, so that's like 170 degrees difference.
Yes, that's unreal. That is crazy. I'd love to go to Alaska, but I think I'll wait till summertime.
Yep. All right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with both of you gentlemen.
All right. And we'll talk. We'll hear you next week on Scarycast, Planet X and Nibiru.
Yep.
Matt, go out and find Bigfoot. Jackson, you do the same thing. And we'll catch everybody next week on Bigfoot and Company. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Great. All right, thank you very much.